News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Erwig.
It is quite the chilly morning. FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Erwig. At 23 degrees right now.
Ooh.
It's kind of chilly. It's still kind of gray, too. That's why we're getting texts, not just from my phone, but also on the text line of, hey, it's snowing at work, and it's snowing where I am in Saraland and all that. So little flurries out there. That's because things haven't quite cleared out, and it's still very, very cold. High today, 41, and it's going to feel more like it's in the 20s.
I know, Dan. You're dying to make some snow angels today. That's what you're. That's what you wanted, right?
I'm driving up to Grove Hill. Going to let it fly.
It is a Tuesday morning, and it is a fat Tuesday morning. But Quinn is still working today, just like we are. Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com also writes for the Washington Examiner. And Quinn, thanks for coming on with us this morning.
Happy Mardi Gras, guys.
You got it. We thought maybe you weren't gonna post for us because Mardi Gras and hey, Fat Tuesday, and hey guys, I don't work on that day, but we appreciate you answering the call today. Still a lot to talk about from over the weekend. You had the impeachment trial. We can kind of talk about that a little bit and your observations of that. Anything you'd like to clear up about that?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of confusion about how Richard Burr of North Carolina could have voted that he thought the trial was probably unconstitutional, but then could vote to convict, whereas Mitch McConnell clearly thought that Trump was guilty, but because he thought the vote was unconstitutional, he voted to acquit. And people are really confused about that. And I've got a column answering that, which really gets into the weeds, and I urge you to read it. No Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell probably made a mistake, it's called. But the long and short of it is that the Senate has a lot of discretion. And the Senate is acting not as a Senate, but in as a sort of juridical body, a quasi-judicial body. And think about it this way. If there is a court of appeals and a three-judge panel says, well, no, we can't get to the merits of the case because we lack jurisdiction, if that is appealed to the full court of appeals, the full 12 judges, and they say, yes, you do have jurisdiction, and they send it back, then the three-judge panel, even though they thought they did not have jurisdiction, is now duty-bound to consider the case on the merits because the higher authority told them that they do have jurisdiction.
So they'd have to kind of hit a reset button.
Yeah, and that's the position the senators were in once the Senate, acting as a court of impeachment, voted 56, I think it was, to 44, that it was indeed a constitutional trial, that they did have jurisdiction. That's why when they sent it back, Burr, who had disagreed on the constitutionality, said, well, now that the Senate has ruled, I am bound by the Senate's rule, and therefore I'm going to look at the case on the merits. McConnell did not do that, even though he's supposed to be a Senate institutionalist. He sort of took a dodge by saying, well, I think it's unconstitutional, so even though I think Trump is guilty of sin, I'm going to vote to acquit. There's no hard and fast rule either way, but you know, they do have some discretion there, but that's why they have discretion, and frankly, I and a lot of constitutional lawyers, which I'm not, but a lot of conservative constitutional lawyers think that Burr had the better part of the argument, that once the Senate had ruled, he needed to consider the case on the merits.
Let's, and I'd love to get your take, Quinn, as far as the political motives, strictly political, you know, kind of take out of account what McConnell felt in his gut about what happened on January 6th. But he's a savvy political character, of course, and politically, What do you think was in it for him to first vote to acquit with the 43 other Republicans that voted the same, or 42 others, because there were seven Republicans that switched on that final vote? And then the speech that came afterwards where he excoriated Trump and really kind of tried to move the party on from the former president. What do you think the political motives for both of those actions were?
Well, first of all, typical politician trying to have it both ways. But secondly, look, nobody's position in leadership these days is absolutely safe. And since the vast majority of his caucus wanted to, you know, find Trump not guilty, he did not want to buck that. So he looked for an excuse that he could find to vote to acquit. And that's why he did that. He can count votes, and he did not want to hurt his own leadership position. On the other hand, he clearly has thought for quite a while that Trump is a detriment to the party as a whole. That Trump eats up all the oxygen and actually hurts other Republicans, as he did in Georgia by torpedoing those two Senate runoffs by running around insisting that the Georgia Republican Party was corrupt. And of course, that made a lot of his voters stay home. So he, McConnell, you know, and again, I'm describing what McConnell's thinking. I'm right. Not saying whether he's right or wrong. But McConnell clearly thinks we need Trump's voters, but we don't need Trump. And so that's the tightrope he was walking, and that's why he was trying to have it both ways.
So seeing some politicians go one way, others go the other, on this 16th of February, I know you can't see the future, but your best guess, Donald Trump, his political future, his future in the Republican Party, what is it?
Well, because they acquitted him, he can always say, well, that he can run again in 2024. And as long as he stays healthy, and as long as he wants to draw attention to himself, he can scare other Republicans who either are ambitious to run themselves and they, you know, they don't know whether they can, you know, whether they need to run as a Trump person or distinguish themselves from Trump. Basically, he does exactly what Mitch McConnell fears he will do, which is suck up all the oxygen. And that leaves everybody sort of in limbo, but it does mean that he is eligible to run again, and he may well do it.
Great text here, and I want to get your take on this, Quinn. Texter said they manipulated evidence in the case. In any courtroom, they would have had serious issue with that. And that is, you know, I think, what, three or four different instances in the trial, and they were, you know, I guess I would say seemingly minor things, but not really when you're talking of something of this magnitude. And Raskin and the House impeachment managers, I think on one tweet they showed from Trump, they changed the date to make it look like a more recent tweet, and several other things, they kind of changed the evidence. What's your take on that? I mean, wouldn't their case have been strong enough to not change the evidence?
Yeah, that seemed pretty absurd to me. But, you know, these are politicians trying to get away with what they can get away with. Look, the Democrats wrote a bad article of impeachment. They focused on the incitement and not enough on the dereliction of duty once the riot had started. They made a lot of other mistakes. Now, that said, they also put together a very compelling case emotionally for people watching on TV. So they did some things well for their purposes. They did other things not so well. And you're right. They changed sort of minor things, but that detracts from the case that they made. And it shows sort of a fundamental dishonesty.
And if that had happened in an actual courtroom, and this was a different kind of case tried on normal American people, what would happen to the prosecutors if they did something like that? Would they just throw that out like they kind of did here?
Well, it depends on how often it happened and how deliberate it was. If it looked like a, you know, just sort of a sloppy mistake, the judge would, you know, would upbraid them and probably have that piece of evidence thrown out. If they did it three or four times, so it started looking deliberate and manipulative, then the judge could sanction the attorneys or recommend them even for, you know, sanctioned by their local bar association. So, again, it just depends on how deliberate it was, how big a sin it was, and the judge has lots of discretion there.
Hi, Quinn Moore with Quinn Hillier, right around the corner. QuinnHillier.com, Washington Examiner
yeah,
as well.
We're now, what, 3 weeks into the Biden presidency? Four? Let's talk about what's been going on in this first month of Biden.
It is 17 after 8 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. The show is Mobile Mornings up at 9 o'clock. Jeff Poor, great local talk and statewide politics as well. 8-22 at FM Talk 106.5. More with Quinn Hillier, and Joe Biden is up and running. Dalton, you've kept a close eye on that.
Yeah, and I've been keeping a close eye on Quinn Hillier's Twitter account. I believe, what is it? Is it at Quinn Hillier? Is it that easy, Quinn?
Yep, it is.
And commenting on the daily news with plenty of hot takes, which I enjoy. But let's talk about, are we even, yeah, we're not even a month into the Biden presidency yet. And it seems like so much has already been done or already been changed. And I was kind of talking with Dan about this. When we were looking at the, you know, the campaigns, and you had, I don't know how many Democrats there started with up there on the stage, 20, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you look at some of those candidates and you're like, okay, if that person were elected, that would by far be the farthest left-wing person that's ever graced this office. And then Biden gets into the mix and you're saying, well, okay, if Biden wins, you know, he'll be maybe left of Obama, which is pretty far left, but not as far left as Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. But it seems through these first 4 weeks that maybe somebody like Elizabeth Warren is in office and Biden's kind of the face of it, because there's been some major actions taken these last month.
Yeah, Biden has, I can't think of a single thing that he has done that even qualifies as moderate, and I can't think of a single thing that he's done that qualifies as unifying. He has governed like a hard left winger. I mean, I kept trying to tell people all last year that while there Biden did have some decent human qualities, that to call him a moderate was crazy, that he was a Ted Kennedy liberal, which meant, you know, that, you know, until recently, a Ted Kennedy liberal was about as far left as you could go and still be elected in this country. He is a liberal, and he is very liberal, and he is governing like that. And, I mean, he's basically killing our energy sector. I mean, again and again and again. He's talking about removing parts of the border wall. Look, until Trump made it such a big issue, the Democrats actually had agreed to build a wall across part of the border, and now it has become, you know, something where the left says you can't have any border wall at all, and Biden looks like he's considering it. You know, I could go right down the list, but basically He's done more executive orders in a month than all previous presidents in their first month combined.
That's
say that again.
Yeah.
All 45 previous presidents combined did not do as many first month executive orders as Biden did. With the I've got to go back and look to see technically what FDR did on some of these things that might not have been called executive orders, but executive actions, but throughout FDR, and certainly that is the case. I looked at the math, but there was a little bit of trouble with how you count FDR.
And I know when President Biden's been asked about it, he says he's just righting the wrongs of the previous president. But with a legislature that seems to be completely frozen, like parts of Texas are now today, that aren't legislating, and you have these executive orders that are signed by each president, it seems like and they're orders, right? They're not laws. So when the next Republican president gets in there, I don't see why we wouldn't see the exact same thing with the pendulum swung in the complete other direction. And to me, either side, it doesn't seem like that's a good thing for America. I'd rather have, you know, the legislature doing its job.
Been, I've been fighting against the overuse of executive orders for 3 decades, but not that I've had any power. I mean, when I was working in Congress, I had a whole file folder called executive orders, which had all the information about when they are and aren't proper, and my point was that they were being overused. But nobody has abused them. Literally, nobody has abused them the way Joe Biden has in these first 27 days or whatever it's been. And not only that, but he is firing executive or independent agency appointments that he doesn't have the authority to fire. And he's already facing lawsuits on that. People that Trump put in on non-controversial independent agencies, and just because they're conservative, even though they're not really policy setting positions, just because they're known conservatives, Biden is going in and firing them, and they're filing suit against them, and they should, because Biden has no power to do so.
So you were talking about the things that he's doing right in plain sight of everybody. Last week you talked about some of these things that are under the radar a little bit. Any more of that going on that you've noticed in terms of appointments or firings?
Well, again, that's why I brought up the firings. There's a guy named Roger Severino who did a lot of stuff in the Department of Health and Human Services under Trump to give consumers or patients more choice, more options. But the left doesn't like that. They like bureaucratic rules. And meanwhile, his wife, Carrie Severino, is one of the leaders in the effort, to have conservative judges and not have liberal judges on the court. And so the left does not like the Severinos. So Biden fired the guy who had just been appointed, even though, again, the statute says he doesn't have the authority on an advisory non-executive body. That's just one example, but he's doing it again and again and again. I've seen at least four people who he has fired like that for various agencies that are supposed to be independent, advisory bodies. Mm-hmm. It's wrong. The press should call them out on it.
Good stuff, Quinn. We're running out of time here. If people want to get your trilogy, the Mad Jones Heretic Trilogy on Amazon, how can they do that, and how can they also follow your writings online?
Well, just type in Mad Jones and my name and Amazon, and please order the books. They're satire, and they're fiction. They're meant to be a good fun read with some underlying thought behind it. You can Google me, Quinn Hillier, Washington Examiner. There's a little glitch now, so you've got to scroll to page one, but you can do that, or just put quinnhillier.com. All kinds of ways to find me.
Maybe the most subdued Fat Tuesday Quinn Hillier in recent history.
Oh, as soon as I hang up, I party, right?
That's up to you, bro. All right, man. Thank you, Quinn.
Happy Mardi Gras, guys.
That's a Quinn Hillier. We're talking to him about that during the break. Like, it's Fat Tuesday. Yeah. You know, he's a New Orleans guy and a Gulf Coast guy, and normally there'd be other activities that would take up his day. Not today.
You said it earlier. It was already going to be a strange Mardi Gras, mm-hmm. but with this freezing cold weather, it's just the weirdest one ever.
No chance of any revelry, I guess. Maybe that's a good thing. It's 8:30 FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, and we have got news straight ahead, plus your phone calls, 343-0106, as we turn up your voice.
FM Talk 106.5, a Fat Tuesday edition of Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Let's check in with Louis Arata from McConnell Automotive. Hey, Louis.
Good morning.
So normally this would be a very festive day in both Mobile and Baldwin counties, and we feel the festivity in our hearts and in our yards. We've done Yardi Gras this year, and the Yardi Gras sale at McConnell still ongoing.
Yeah. You know, this morning I'd be here getting all these trucks ready to pull all the floats for today, and I'm glad I'm kind of inside right now not doing that because it's cold.
It is, and now somebody can come out and get one of those trucks maybe with just a few fewer miles on it than normal.
That is correct. We have a we got a good selection of new trucks. We got a great selection of used. You can check those out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. We got plenty of trucks. We got plenty of SUVs on the used car line. Also got those GM certifieds. We're going to be open today. We're going to have the Yardi Gras sale. We got beads here. Y'all want some beads? Come on by here. I got plenty of them. And we're just going to have fun today and stay warm.
Yeah, you said it. Also, if somebody doesn't feel like braving the conditions, they can check you out online.
That's right. They can check everything out online at McConnellAutomotive.com and just give us a call, Gene or I, and we'll shoot you a price or text or whatever.
All right. It's that easy. Thank you, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
837 FM Talk 106.5. We will talk a little bit more about the winter storm that is ravaging a lot of the country. There's like a half of our population is under some sort of warning or watch right now.
Yeah.
Or in the middle of, beyond warnings and watches, they're in the middle of the real stuff.
Yeah. And, my brother and my childhood friends have all moved away and moved to different parts of the country. One of them moved to Houston, and my brother moved to Del Rio, Texas. Mm. I'll tell you about their day yesterday when we start talking about
that. I'll
bet
it wasn't good.
It was not.
Also, Gus Malzahn is now the head football coach at the University of Central Florida.
Yeah, he was knighted, literally knighted yesterday. The UCF Golden Knight asked Gus to take a knee, and then he put the his sword to both sides of his head and then knighted him. And it looks like we have a caller that actually wants to talk about the Gus bus. Dave in Foley.
By the way, at Auburn, they put the sword right through his head. Except they also gave him $20 million. Dave is in Foley. Hey, Dave.
Good morning, Dan.
How are you, buddy?
I just wanted to check and see if Gus Malzahn's official title is now Knight of the Living Dead.
Knight of the Living Dead. He's alive and well. He's got $21 million in his pocket. What's the
buyout was $21.5 million, and Auburn paid half of that up front, basically 30 days after he was fired. And you know, normally when a coach gets a buyout, I think there's a clause that if another team hires him, maybe it's not if you leave. I don't know, but I think normally the other school that hires him pays part of that buyout off.
Yeah.
That's not the case here. Auburn's still on the hook for the rest of that $21 million, and he gets a new deal from UCF.
Is it going to be a winner down there at UCF?
Who is UCF? Are they the living dead?
Dave from Foley.
Yeah.
Continuing with his point on FM Talk 106.5.
I think the funniest thing about that Gus interview yesterday, well, his press conference to announce his hiring, is one of the journalists down there in Orlando, Florida, sunny Orlando, Florida, at this non-Power 5 school said, like, do you know the pressure cooker you're walking into? I only listened to it. I didn't see Gus's face, but I imagine he was like, dude, have you seen what I've been through these last eight years? Auburn, completely relentless. We're talking an SEC school who's used to winning.
Yep.
UCF is nothing for Gus.
No, he can handle UCF. He's also coached in that league at
Arkansas State's in the Sun Belt.
Right, but he did coach in that league, Tulsa.
Okay.
He was an assistant coach at Tulsa.
ACC. AAC, I should say.
Offensive coordinator at Tulsa, and actually brought a team here for that.
And by the way, I know this isn't a sports show, but Gus did say yesterday he will be calling the plays the rest of his career.
Yeah,
no more OC for Gus.
He's had it with that, right?
Yeah.
David is on the line. David, good morning.
Hey, guys. And Gus Malzahn's team at Tulsa was quite offensive, too.
They were offensively strong running the football, as I remember. I think they ran for 300 games here at the bowl game in Mobile.
David, you sound a little under the weather. You all right?
No, I'm fine. I just got done getting my first dose of the Moderna vaccine from Walmart. And let me tell you, if the person that designed the logistics rollout for the Walmart vaccine doesn't work for Chick-fil-A, they are certainly qualified to do so.
So tell us about the experience.
It took about 30 minutes total from walking in to walking out.
Okay.
And that was doing all the paperwork, getting the shot, and waiting around for 15 minutes to make sure I didn't have an allergic reaction.
You scheduled the appointment online?
Yes, you have to schedule the appointment online. You go, you give them your driver's license, your proof of eligibility, and if you have insurance, you give them your insurance information, and then they input all that into the computer. They sit you down, give you a shot, till you go sit down for about 15 minutes to make sure you don't pass out from the shot, and then you're on your way.
How are you? You were eligible. You were kind of in the healthcare industry, right?
Yes, I'm a courier for a lab company, and that qualifies me as a healthcare worker. But also, transportation and logistics people are also eligible as well. So I'm doubly eligible.
So how did you prove to them what you do to verify to them that they were giving the shot to somebody that qualified?
Because I'm a contractor for the company, the only thing I had was my essential worker letter from back in March of last year. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure you can provide pay stub, W-2, that kind of stuff if you actually work for.
Yeah, I'm just hearing stories of people who are sliding in there, saying that they're a teacher or saying that they and they may teach a course mm-hmm. in something they do professionally, not an educator.
It's got to be so difficult to prove some of that stuff. I mean, it's not right to do it, but it's tough on the other side.
That's why I was wondering what they did with David, if they were tough to make you prove it.
Did they ask you which arm you wanted in, or did they pick for you?
No, they picked for me. They gave you a little white ring around where they're going to shoot it in, and then they stick it in and put it in, and you go.
Which one did you get, by the way? Vaccine?
I got the vaccine that all the cool kids are getting, the Moderna one.
Okay. Moderna. Are you feeling Moderna arm yet?
No, I'm not feeling Moderna arm yet. I've literally had no reaction to the vaccine.
No reaction.
That's normally when I would punch one of my buddies in the arm. But I just wanted to workshop that with David over the phone first.
Well, David, we wish you well. When did it occur to you that your time was here, that you could go online and you could not be on the sidelines anymore?
Well, because I don't interact directly with the patients because I'm just a courier. I wanted to wait a little bit to ensure that everybody that does work directly with patients that wanted to get the vaccine had the ability to do so.
Amen to that.
So I've been thinking about a week or two about getting it, and then when you guys announced that Walmart was going to start doing it, I was like, well, now's my opportunity. So I got on Walmart's website, and bing, bang, boom.
Wow. Very good cool. to hear. Thank you, David.
Thanks for the update, David.
You have a good one.
So I guess Walmart continues today with the vaccines. We talked earlier about some of the cancellations that began yesterday because so many of the health organizations around here weren't sure what the roads would look like this morning,
whether
it'd be dangerous to drive. And so what USA Health and Infirmary, those you schedule your appointments, they canceled those for today and are rescheduling and are letting those patients know when they're rescheduled. OWA had another one of those first-come, first-serve events today. I think they said they had 200 doses available for first doses,
mm-hmm.
and they have rescheduled today's event for Friday. So now it looks like Thursday at OWA, there will be second doses only for those that have – it's their time for their second dose. And then Friday, first come, first serve, 200 initial doses, and the rest of the day they'll be doing second doses.
Okay, and, better safe than sorry. A lot of these decisions were made yesterday when it was started. We didn't know quite how the storm was going to affect us.
Right.
As it turns out, it's just – gray and cold, and the only change we're going to have in the forecast is soon it's going to be sunny and cold. It's going to be windy. It's not going to be pleasant, but you probably could have been in line somewhere and gotten your shot today, but it was, again, better safe than sorry. We didn't know what the storm was going to be along the coast.
Yeah, exactly right. Better safe than sorry. It's well said.
And I said it. And I'm going to take complete credit for it. It's 8:46 at FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwick. And it is so cold out there.
How cold is it?
Well, Dalton's got to... This is on you now.
Okay.
Dalton's got some examples for us on the way. And some irony in Texas coming up. Morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwick, FM Talk 106.5. And Jeff Poore on the way. You should be very interested in that. It's a great look at Alabama politics. Nobody else can really do for us. Of course, Jeff also writes for Yellowhammer News. You can check that out at yellowhammernews.com. Also, he is a member of the staff of Breitbart.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these interviews end up in those publications.
Yeah, on today's
websites.
Today's show, Jeff will talk with Dan Gaynor from the Media Research Center, also former U.S. Attorney Jay Towne, and then get a couple politicians on here, State Representative Scott Stadhagen and State Senator Dan Roberts. So you don't want to miss the Fat Tuesday edition of the Jeff Poore Show.
FM Talk 106.5 with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig, and right now I think we'll probably look over this storm a little bit and the way it's affected certain states, cities, and people.
So I've got right now 23 degrees where I stand, which not actually inside the studio, but in our area, general area, 23 degrees. I think Dr. Bill said 19 was the low out at South Alabama campus this morning.
It was.
But that's nothing compared to even what we're seeing in the northern part of Alabama, northern parts of Mississippi. Oh, is that?
It's cold, man. It is so cold.
Perfect background music for this. So yeah. He said, I think 3 degrees in Tunica, Mississippi right now.
He did, yeah.
But Texas yesterday got absolutely hammered. And I'm sure so many people out there have seen the video and photos from Texas. And they're going to get more of a storm today, like a second one passing through. My brother, actually, he's with the Air Force. And he's out in Del Rio, Texas, right there on the Mexican border. I have another best friend of mine who moved out to Houston. His wife is a nurse, and she got a job out there in Houston. So they've been out there for maybe 2 years in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I texted him yesterday just to see how he was doing. And he said yesterday morning in Houston, they lost power at 3 a.m. Now, they have a daughter, newborn daughter, born about a month and a week ago. They have a newborn daughter in their house. And he said it's absolutely freezing there.
Wow.
He said when I was texting him 9 a.m. yesterday morning, he said they were five blankets deep in the bedroom trying to kind of stay warm. But that's in Houston. He said they weren't expecting the power to be back on until later last night. I've texted him this morning just to kind of see what's up. But I think they had some cell phone tower issues as well in Houston. So lots of people without power yesterday. I texted my brother. Like I said, he's in Del Rio, and the counties in Val Verde County. I checked on the online and at poweroutage.us, which I used so often during the hurricane season.
We had that bookmarked in September, didn't we?
We did. And yeah. Texas was lit up the same way Alabama was during that last storm of last year. And his county, they said, was 50% down, 50% of the power out in his county. So I texted him, like, how is everything? Have you lost power? He said, no, I haven't lost power, but a pipe burst in my walls. He said, I didn't start the drip soon enough. He said, should be a quick $2,000 fix. I don't know how expensive that actually is. I don't know if he has like a pipe that was not wrapped correctly or what's happening there. But my two buddies in Texas with a couple separate issues, one with the power out and a newborn baby, and my brother with a pipe burst in the wall.
Yeah, so the power doesn't go out. You think, I'm good.
Yeah.
But no,
no.
The pipe burst inside the wall.
Yeah, that's
hopefully not happening around here. But it did get down to 19 degrees this morning.
Yeah, and pretty rough. But you look at these power outages and these brownouts and or rolling blackouts, I guess they call them, in Texas. And it's really interesting because there's talk of all this clean energy, which on its face it makes sense, and I feel that as a nation we should be doing everything we can to find as many alternative modes of energy mm-hmm. as we can. But in Texas, which, just think of how much oil they're able to get in Texas.
I mean, petroleum is
the team in
Houston, certainly.
The team in Houston was called the Oilers.
Yeah.
That's how big, oil, yeah. And think of all that oil money there. And Texas has moved so far into this, clean energy, this green energy, I should say, lifestyle that...
Including wind energy, right? Which I didn't even
exactly.
know.
Yeah, wind energy and solar panels. I didn't know until yesterday, and then I was reading some more on it this morning, 23% of Texas's state power comes from wind generation. And yesterday, these wind turbines, which are absolutely massive, mm-hmm. You see them on TV and you think they're those little like birthday flags that look like turbines. They're huge and they froze. Not all of them, but I think a whole bunch of them froze yesterday and were not generating power. And then solar panels, not just in Texas, but in parts of the U.S. are covered in snow now and not getting any solar energy and not producing any energy. And a lot of these places, I guess, didn't plan for that. They in Texas, they didn't plan for all the snow, of course, but no backup plan. And so they had to have these rolling blackouts, and I think in some cases just straight up blackouts because they didn't have enough energy to power the entire grid. It's amazing.
And so in Texas, by the way, weather-wise, look at it like this too. Houston would not expect anything like this. Houston, it's almost like Mobile as opposed to Memphis. Houston to Dallas.
Right.
In Dallas, you have to be ready for some rough winter weather, very frigid temperatures. It happens. But Dallas might be 250 miles or more north of Houston. Houston's along the Gulf Coast. So a lot of that state, think of it like this, like they're not ready for that at all. And we were almost kind of not ready for it ourselves here. We just didn't get the inclement weather that came along with it. Mm-hmm. We just got cold temperatures. But can you, in Houston, Texas, those temperatures right now, there's no way they're prepared for it.
No, no. And, you know, the reason they do these rolling blackouts is because they know they don't have enough power for their power grid. They know that there's only a limited amount of time that they'll be able to supply everyone and everything with power. So they look at different, and this has been happening in California for a while now, where there's also a lot of this quote-unquote clean energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they look at, you know, where they have hospitals and police stations and some of the more important things that absolutely need to keep running, and they'll, you know, just black out portions of their town or city or state in order to keep these other places running. And that's exactly what's happening in Texas. Actually, last night there was supposed to be a hockey game in Dallas. They didn't call it off until 30 minutes prior to the game, after all of the employees had already arrived. And I think that was strictly because of the optics. You have all these people sitting in their freezing cold living rooms, and they were going to power the American Airlines Arena in Dallas. Didn't make much sense.
No, it did not. It's amazing. Here's not what didn't make much sense. They came to that conclusion 30 minutes before they were going to drop the puck.
Yeah.
That didn't make much sense.
Close one.
It is 8:59 FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Norwood. We'll do it again tomorrow on your Ash Wednesday.